Coming up next, bathrobes, piers, broadsides,
civil liberties,
and poverty in Santa Cruz, California, and everywhere you can imagine. We have special guests from the street. We have bathrobes, pier, Robert Norse, your host, that's me. We have live recordings of victims on the mall describing their victimization. We have music. We have reports from Berkeley. Please stay tuned, and to tune us in initially, you get this special treat. You get to hear On the Mall, and that's happening right now. You're listening to 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse. The call-in number for this talk show is 427-3772. We should be going at least until 12, maybe longer if they let us, if the FCC and the next talk show host doesn't shut us down. So hang with us, and here you get to hear some of the last couple weeks on the mall, and then you get to hear me live. So here's me on tape, and then me live, and hopefully you live. So give a call to 427-3772 over the next 2 hours. Feel free a citation. Apparently on complaint from the Manx clothing store. Not sure who filed the complaint. Phil has been playing here while I've been nearby for about... Let me interrupt this tape you're hearing. This is a tape of Phil Free's second ticket. Phil Free is a street musician who has received two Disturbing the Peace tickets on the Pacific Avenue Santa Cruz Mall. This second ticket happened last week, and we played the first ticket and the various interviews around that ticket last show. This is the second part of that interview. We're going to go right into it. It's a taped interview. You'll be able to hear Phil and me talking about this ticket on the street. I was actually present, and I will fill in on some more details after the tape is over. Feel free to call in with any questions, and here it is. Half an hour, he received a kind of a courtesy notice from the host about 12:17, which I witnessed. Phil plays passionately, but I asked several passers-by if they found him offensive. Only one did, and that was a man who is a local merchant who apparently is concerned about the feelings of his fellow merchants in Dale Williams and the travel agency, the Riordan-Winnett travel agency next to Dale Williams Jewelers. The other stores, particularly the ones across the street, including Manx, have internal music playing, which you can't even hear Phil when you're standing inside the store. The jewelry store you can hear Phil, but you have to be standing next to the window, and that is indeed the store he's playing next to. He's playing next to that window. And in Riordan, you can barely hear it. In the shoe shop, which has a door open, it's very faint, and I heard no complaint from the shoe person who was actually in the shop, and I spoke to him briefly. So Phil is receiving a ticket, and in spite of the fact that he was given a courtesy warning by the hosts that he had another half hour left to play here at least, of course any citizen can file a complaint anytime she or he wants, so that is an option a citizen has. These police officers are simply doing their job in this case. So Phil, we're talking now to Phil Free, the man who is getting the ticket. Phil, what's your reaction to this?
I just wish they'd just ask me to move. I'll move. The host came by and told me I had my hour. I thought that was our agreement. I don't know. I don't even know who the person is that's complaining, so I can't really comment on it.
A woman across the street in Manx,
tickets. I'm not supposed to approach those people until the case.
Well, what they're stating is that you often play in this area, and that they've talked to you a number of times in the past. The past meaning within the past 2 weeks or so, on numerous occasions, and every time you haven't complied with the wishes that you leave.
Officer who was
giving
a ticket, no. Officer Garacio? Badge 163 here.
And
charges disturbing the peace, folks, playing forbidden music.
Been a serious crime, Robin?
Playing forbidden music on the street. The jeweler doesn't like this music. Apparently the complaint is traveled from across the street at the swimwear joint, at a clothing place.
Okay. Yeah. How you doing?
Okay.
So, on this occasion, instead of coming and asking you to move, that's why you didn't have somebody come out and ask you to move, because they've done so a number of times in the past, and you haven't complied, so her contention this time is that she's going to put you in a citizen's arrest for disturbing her peace. That's basically it. So, go ahead and sign the red box. It is not an admission of guilt. It's promised to appear in court on October 17th, 1995, 8:30 in the morning.
So again, the contention of the store owner is that she or he has asked, or the complainant, I should say, has asked Phil to move in the past and feels that therefore his failure, his arriving today apparently, is sufficient grounds for believing that he's malicious.
Okay.
And thereby disturbing the peace.
You have the right to make
sense. Officer was speaking to a woman inside the store, so presumably it's her piece.
Disturbing customers and the business. Well, on, thanks, okay? Been advised of this. She's not welcome to play this corner where your music is going to be going to that business, okay? So for the rest of the day, if you are playing out here, then that would be, it'll be a misdemeanor, likely to continue, and you're not cooperating, so then I'll have to take you to jail, okay? Which probably not going to do any of us any good. That's going to be up to you. Okay?
Okay.
Take care.
You too.
Briefing, the officers on their bikes have just left. I'm keeping my eye on my car across the street so I don't get a ticket myself. So what's the background?
Well, there's so much background and there's too much to go into really quickly, but let me give you really quickly my belief on this matter. I've been cited for disturbing the peace now twice on very shaky ground.
But not at this location. Right?
Not at this location. Twice in Santa Cruz by the same officer. An officer that made mention that familiarity with my music. On my music. And I believe that they are enforcing these particular incidents that have very little basis and are illegal, and they have no grounds for these disturbing the peace charges, but they are all too willing to file charges on shaky grounds because of their personal feelings in the matter. And that is my belief.
Okay. Do we have a court date for you on this ticket? And on the prior ticket, I believe you told me before, but perhaps you could tell us again.
This one's going to be the 10th as well. It's going to be an interesting day at the courthouse.
So October 10th, do we have the time for, as well as the...
This one is 8:30 in the morning.
So 8:30 in the morning at 10 o'clock, and your name on the ticket is?
Philip Ronald Frenelli.
Philip Ronald Frenelli. For those of you who wish to go to court and to observe what's going on, the first court appearance is an arraignment, at which I presume, Phil, you'll either plead guilty or demur or some such thing.
Be very surprised and expect that I've been zapped by Navstar satellites or taken away and given drugs if I respond with anything but not guilty.
Okay, we will keep our eye on you. And
Yeah.
Can I have a cigarette?
Sure.
You like your music.
They didn't ask me to leave. They gave me a ticket for disturbing the peace.
That's a misdemeanor punishable by up to 6 months in jail.
My second one. Apparently I got to go to court twice on the same day. Both my tickets are for the same day, so it's going to be interesting.
Do you have to have some sort of permit to play in the mall? Why did you get a ticket then?
We had an informal agreement several years back when the Downtown Business Association wanted to regulate street musicians.
Right,
and
I remember that.
Follow certain regulations, and we had like an agreement that mediated that rather than having laws in place. And over the past year, I've seen those agreements being tossed out the window. And the host came by and told me I had an hour here, and that's the agreement. Is an hour, if somebody complains, you still get to play an hour because, you know, you got to have your freedom of speech. Yeah, I didn't get my hour today. I was, what, 15 minutes short of my hour? The host came by and told me I had an hour left. I had 15 minutes to play, and then the officers came over and gave me a ticket.
He was playing, you know, with intensity, but I wouldn't say he was playing in any way that disturbed the average person walking by.
Yeah, but if it disturbs the business, why don't you just cooperate with them and move on instead of raising the hassle?
I move after my hour's up.
Well, why do you have to take it that far?
Because they don't come out and talk to me. They just call cops and send authority figures to harass me, and I think that's a class thing. I'm not going to accept treatment like that from another.
You're obstructing their business. They're trying to make a living.
My business. I'm homeless and out here on the street making my business.
You could cooperate with the city instead of becoming an asshole.
That's a political message. I'm not becoming an asshole.
You are when you do that.
It's free speech. No, I'm not.
That's not free speech.
It's free speech.
Trying to harass them.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. I don't even know who they are. They never come and talk. Now, normally, the hosts come and tell me, you have a complaint. The only way you can find out who complained is if you go ahead and stay there and get a ticket. So I don't even know who most of these people are. They won't come out and talk to me. And hell with that. I'm not subject to this enforcement arm of some upper class, some business class, these people. I'm out here making a living, too. And there's a lot of people out here that like it, or I wouldn't come back. If I didn't make a living coming out here on the street, I'd be in making tapes or doing something else or taking it on the road, but I can get by and still
deliver it too. I noticed your stuff, it kind of talks about what we're talking about right here in your music, so that's why I was wondering if somebody asked you to leave, if this store did, or...
Yeah. That's just it. I don't know who. So I don't know where to not, try and direct my voice away from, because they don't tell me who. The hosts come, or the cops come, tell me, there's been a complaint. Well, who complained? Well, I can't tell you that. Well, how come you can't tell me that? Well, who is it? And, you know, a lot of times, you know, the hosts don't like it, because I wrote a song about them. The cops don't like it, because I wrote a song about them. The cops that have busted me twice now expressed familiarity with my music, songs in particular that he liked while he was giving me my ticket. You know, that you can't, it's not going to pass the straight face test in court. These same officers are coming down and just going ahead and writing the ticket, even though they're not going to fly in court because they'd like to harass me and stop me from what I'm doing, and I'm not going to stop.
So the fact of the matter is, even though I said earlier on this tape that the officer is obliged to fill out a citizen's arrest, I think the officer can make an independent judgment as to whether he feels there has been a violation of the law. I think that I'm not entirely sure that the officer needs to fill out a citizen's arrest form. For instance, when I was operating a homeless table up at the Cat and Canary a year ago, a citizen came up who was opposed to my view, a conservative-looking and dressed citizen, grabbed the petition I had in the paper, crumpled it up, and walked off with it, engaging in what would be traditionally be called vandalism and theft. Well, I ran after this guy, and essentially through shouting and drawing a crowd, I forced him to stop, and I was able to secure the paper back from him. When I attempted to file a charge of theft and assault, the police refused to take a report. Then when I was finally able to take a report, of course they made no arrest. So the question again, it's not an automatic procedure that the police officer must necessarily issue a ticket. It is a matter of judgment. And so it may be appropriate for you to file a complaint against this officer.
Exactly. He's using his judgment call ability to make a judgment that's favorable to his position.
So now I'm here at the Hound Dog, the host.
Well, actually, I'm here at the studio, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. It's Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides. I'm Bathrobe Spear, and in the studio with me, I've got a whole bunch of people. But just simply to sum up what happened, kind of a postscript on that tape you were listening to. You're listening to the second fill-free ticket for essentially playing music on the mall that annoys certain merchants and apparently certain police officers. I mentioned one case. Police officers are not required to give tickets, even if citizens complain. And they have to make a judgment. And when they arrived, I don't think they even listened to Phil's music. I don't even know if he was playing when they arrived. He probably was. But they do not have to issue a ticket, and apparently it was the same officer who issued Phil both tickets on the mall, again, for playing songs of a political nature such as Hospitality Nazis, and monkey wrench the state. I'm not sure what the exact words are. Phil, forgive me if I'm screwing up your lyrics. Anyway, I mean, I know that I operated a table in front of the ID building last Christmas where we were trying to emphasize abusive behavior by Stuart Martin, who is the manager of the ID building and the son of the owner, and whose bogus complaints to police had resulted in numerous arrests, including my own earlier that year. Charges were dropped. Again, the charge was disturbing the peace. So we were there, and Stuart Martin attempted to file charges against us repeatedly by calling the police. The police finally began to ignore him. So the police, in fact, can ignore bogus nonsense from merchants if they wish. And I guess when it becomes so outrageous as Stuart Martin's was, that becomes appropriate to ignore it. But apparently Manx and Ali of Ali's Alibaba's kiosk are regarded as okay to file complaints against people, though I again think this may be a case of the officer, the same officer in both cases was filing these complaints. And this is a serious charge, folks. This means up to 6 months in jail and up to $1,000 fine if convicted. This is a misdemeanor crime, so it's not small potatoes, not small stuff. It's not like a slap on the wrist. It is a calculated drive to attack Phil Free, the rather controversial street musician. So we're going to have more discussion of that, and you're welcome to call in and discuss that with us at 427-3772. But right now, we have a brief kind of update from Bob LaMonica, who hates it when I call him Battling Bob. He's gonna beat me up the next time I do that. But I like to call him Battling Bob. I don't know. I mean, he's a fighter. That's the way I call him that. And he's a man who's been behind the coalition to recall Art Danner. We also have four people in the studio and one puppy who will be coming on the air shortly to discuss problems at the open-air shelter, the Back 40, the River Street campground area. Some of them were in the paper the other day, so we got some celebrities here in the studio. But before that happens, I'm gonna have Bob here because Bob, I understand, has been working at the county fair overtime, undertime, all the time, trying to get signatures for the coalition to recall District Attorney Art Danner, who has been DA for God knows how many years, and he's still doing that. In fact, he may decide to even show up at the Hound Dog the Host's table. The Hound Dog the Host's table, as some of you loyal listeners may know, is the table that concerns itself with sort of friendly fascism on the Santa Cruz Mall. That is to say, the actions of the green shirts. Those are the merchant-funded sort of mini-cops or wannabe cops who walk up and down the mile with up and down the mall with grins on their faces and little downtown host T-shirts made of green, telling people, don't sit here on the sidewalk or you'll get a $168 ticket. Don't play hacky sack here. Take your dog off the mall. Don't ride your bike here. They enforce the downtown ordinances, which, in the experience of many people I've spoken with, and to some extent my experience, have been discriminatorily enforced against people who the cops don't want downtown. We're talking about the people without money, people who are poor, people who are young, and perhaps other classifications as well. Activists and so forth. But let me turn now to sort of squeeze in Bob. Bob LaMonica, sign in. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, thank you, Robert. Just a couple of brief comments. We're going to conclude the petition drive for the Danner recall up at UC Santa Cruz. We're up there now. If you want to get involved in what is, I think, a really wonderful way to conclude this aspect of this part of the abusive power, the anti-abusive power movement in Santa Cruz, forgive me, give a call, 457-2670. I just wanted to make some brief comments to concur and confer. The unifying factor to all this harassment that people are experiencing when they are engaged in confrontational politics on the side of righteousness is abuse of power, okay? Complaints, you know, quote, unquote. A lot of these complaints are set ups as far as I'm concerned. They express a clear double standard. They show that certain officers of the law and people engaged in law enforcement will do is manipulate the process, play shell game paper trails. Quite often you can't even read complaints, you know. This has happened certainly to the DA recall. All along the way we have been harassed, consciously and constantly from the very beginning. From the very beginning, they have tried to discredit this. They have tried to derail it. They have tried to suppress the truth. And all we've been asking for is for the community to deal with the truth, the facts. The fact are, and also Art Danner has been DA for 17 years now. He's in his 17th year. He's on his fifth term. Now, one of the big issues that brought a critical mass to launch a recall against five-term DA Art Danner was covered up falsified time cards. The DA himself directed time cards to be falsified, and this overlapped the last election, June 1994 election for DA. This issue reached the Board of Supervisors, my fellow citizens. And the Board of Supervisors on December 6, 1994, voted 4-1 to take no action because, as far as I'm concerned, they were afraid of the outcome. Now, what are they elected for? They were elected to represent the people, to recognize and respond to abuse of power. They failed in their very basic mission, and out of that failure, a recall was born. Now, I think that it's time the community looked at double standards, looked at how things can be set up, and how the power people have the believability, and quite often they do not have the truth.
Well, Bob, I understand that tomorrow you actually have something coming up in court with Attorney Ed Frye that may put the fire to the feet of Art Danner.
Oh, it's certainly, and it's fantastic, and all honor and accolades goes to Mr. Frye. Ed Frye filed a taxpayer's lawsuit, and my date might be wrong. I believe it was March 6th of this year, and it has now come to a point where there is going to be a hearing. They're attempting to dismiss this thing on rather ridiculous grounds as far as I'm concerned. But all this is part of the unfolding of the exposure of abuse of power in Santa Cruz County. It is high time that we dealt, hopefully, in a polite way, but we simply have to deal with abuse of power. Now, the symbolic reality of the district attorney getting away with what this guy has gotten away with for as long as he has. One last thing. Art Danner should have gone down 8 years ago. The victim of his bodily injury car wreck, my fellow citizens, was blood tested. And he was not. And he was the at-fault driver, and he admits to drinking. Now, there is a double standard there. And I haven't even mentioned what was Plan A. It's lucky for Sandra Larson, who was the victim of that drunken car wreck June 9th, 1987, that she had nothing in her blood. What was Plan A? This has been 8 years in the making. It took 8 years to get a critical mass to get this thing going. We're at very important times. The 90s are very important. I think the two big issues in the 90s, in my opinion, are abuse of power and exploitation.
Let's return to Ed Frye's lawsuit tomorrow. Tell us something about that.
Hearing 8:30, Judge Samuel Stevens Court, County Courthouse. And we'll see. There has been, and I'm not all that clear on the details, there's been a motion to dismiss this. And there'll be a hearing to overcome the motion to dismiss. And certainly whatever goes down, it is another indication of the inability of certain people who are in positions of power to ever admit they're wrong. Now, what is the mark of a tyrant? A tyrant is never wrong. We're talking about the district attorney here, ladies and gentlemen, directing time cards to be falsified. Now, we're not making up any of that. The reality is that the time cards were directed to be falsified by Art Danner. They were falsified as unavailable. The time period overlaps the June election for DA. Catherine Gardner's time cards were falsified from March 18th through July 20th. She sat at home. Her time cards are falsified as unavailable.
So now, as I understand it then, and I talked to badass Becky Johnson, who's she's now got a kind of a prime position on cable television. She's a reporter, spoke to me this morning, and she said that the case, if the Judge Stevens, who will be the judge seeing this case tomorrow, hearing this case tomorrow as well, hopefully we'll all be seeing it and hearing it, those of us who want to go down to court at 8:30, that'd be Judge Stevens' Superior Courtroom. If the judge declines to dismiss the case, that means, according to Becky, that Art Danner will go to jury trial in January. And according to her, this is a probable outcome. Now, I was somewhat more skeptical about this. Do you have any predictions on Judge Stevens?
Well, I would hope that that Becky's prediction is correct. But what has been the apparent ploy all along is the paper trail, shell game, double standard. And in the final analysis, they'll go as far as using immunity. The problem with Mr. Danner, as far as I'm concerned, is the mark of a tyrant. He is never wrong. And he has used the intimidation card, whatever dirt that this guy has on people in the community. I think that the citizens of Santa Cruz need to rise above all that. I hope we have a good turnout tomorrow morning, 8:30, Judge Samuel Stevens courtroom, because whatever happens, this is history. We're all making history right here. We're making a stand about abuse of power, and participate in this is important.
So, and if you wish to help the Coalition to Recall Danner campaign, you may find Bob at home at his phone number...
457-2670. UC Santa Cruz is the focus of our activity right now. Get involved in it. It's a lot of fun. It's very empowering. Get involved. 457-2670.
And you might also find Bob at the Hound Dog, the host's table. We're talking about, as we'd hoped to do, sharing our table with different groups because we want this table to be essentially a link to different kinds of political action, not simply monitoring the hosts, although that is, I feel, the main purpose of the table at the moment. And if anybody else who's concerned with the marijuana movement, concerned with the rights of psychiatric inmates, who's concerned with local civil liberties of disability people, problems in terms of Afro-Americans or African-Americans, Hispanic-Americans, we're interested in all these issues. We invite you to bring your literature down and join us at the table. We will continue, of course, to hound dog the hosts, which means to housebreak these guys who are at the downtown guys and gals at the downtown informant center who are paid by the merchants to essentially repress a class of people through legislation passed by the city council a year ago. Well, I want to thank you, Bob. Anything you want to conclude with?
One last comment. It is very basic to democracy for citizens to recognize and respond to abuse of power. Thank you very much for letting me get on the air.
Sure. Thank you, Bob. And again, you know, get in touch with Bob either at the table or at his phone number for...
457-2670, and we will be participating at the table on the mall.
Excellent.
And it's, in fact, it's an honor.
Well, okay? I would hope so.
This is all part of a collective, of a whole. You know, just like cowardice does not require a formal conspiracy to be effective, courage does not require a formal conspiracy to be effective. We're talking about abuse of power here, and it cuts across the board. What is so important about the DA recall is that it is not only symbolic, okay, but we're talking about such a clear example of a public official who is the district attorney. Okay, we're talking about a five-term DA who has laid down a track record of nonchalant abuse. And it's time that the citizens recognize that and dealt with it. And not only the DA, but across the board.
It's time that you guys and gals got out on the streets. You gals and guys got out there to help deal with all of these issues. And so join us at the Hound Dog the Host's table, which I believe, I'm told, and I'm not sure, is supposed to be up today, actually, from 11:30 on. Even as my show continues, you will be able to go out there and monitor abusive behavior by wannabe cops on the mall. That's what this table is all about. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
Okay. You're listening to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and the phone number to call in here, and this includes District Attorney Art Danner, if he wants to call in. Art, you know, we want to hear from you. It's 427-3772. We also have now, or we're going to move on to the next segment of the show, which is a very fortuitous meeting I had earlier today. I often have told people that if they want to speak on the air about issues that are important to them concerning civil rights of the poor, that they meet me in the Taco Bell parking lot at 9:45 Mondays and Fridays. Well, I ran into a group of informed citizens who are users of the River Street campground earlier at that time. And they came to the studio with me along with their pup. And I'm going to ask them to come to the mic and sign in and kind of cluster around. Bring in some chairs, gang, if you can, or just kind of do what you can to cluster in so everybody can sit down. And we'll talk about some issues about what's been happening out there. These folks have been out at River Street, at least some of them, perhaps all of them, for about 2 months, living there in the campground. The campground became the only legal place for homeless people to sleep at night after 11 o'clock at night, thanks to Santa Cruz City Ordinance 6.36, the sleeping ban. In 1994 is when this campground opened. It now lodges, what, about 100, 125 people, something like that? And these are four of the people and one of the puppies. have one puppy in the studio. For the first time ever, perhaps you'll be able to hear puppy love happening over the air. So let's everybody sign in. Let me advise you folks. You have to come pretty close to the mic, like about this distance, and speak about this tone of voice. So you first. What's your name? Closer. Very good. Roll on in there. It's kind of a learning experience.
Move the trap.
Okay. So who are you?
I'm Alicia.
Say it again.
I'm Alicia.
Okay, and let's have some other. You can actually say your names loudly. Maybe we can actually hear you. Your
name's Bill.
Bill.
Edward.
Edward.
Anita.
Anita, and the puppy is?
Contrila.
Contrila. Okay, well, I'm going to try to remember people's names, but if I say, hey, you, forgive me. I'm Robert. Now, who wants to speak first about any of the issues that happened out there?
I believe Anita does.
Anita wants to speak first. Okay, Anita, you and your puppy can have the mic here. So where are you from, Anita, yourself, originally?
Oregon.
Okay. Remember, lean into the mic. You want to be as close as possible. Like to there, right?
All right.
Okay. You're from Oregon. When did you come down?
About a month ago.
Okay. You got to get closer to the mic. But you literally have to be this close to the mic to be clearly heard, okay? There we go. That's better.
Now, I came to Santa Cruz about a month ago.
Very good. And what was your impression of Santa Cruz when you arrived here?
I liked Santa Cruz when I first got here, but now I don't like it.
Ah, so you've had some bad experiences in Santa Cruz.
Especially at the Back 40.
So you came to the Back 40. Now, were you alone when you were traveling, or did you hook up with folks, or what?
No, one of my fiancé now came down to Santa Cruz with me.
Right. Is your fiancé in the studio, or is this someone who's not present?
Yes, Edward.
Hey. Hi, Edward. Congratulations. My condolences. I don't believe in marriage myself, but that's another matter for another show. You were at the Back 40 and you lived there, what, every night?
For about 3 weeks, yes.
And how were the conditions out there?
When I first got there, it was okay because they gave us a tent and everything to sleep in. And then it started getting favoritism and... the worker there, Chemo, for some reason he didn't like us because when we got there we didn't have blankets or sleeping bags or anything. So, and he has now taken the tent that was given to us, ripped it up and threw it away because he claims it was his.
Now, when did he do this?
After we called the Sentinel and had the reporters go to the Back 40 and check it out, and it made front page of the Sentinel.
What day was that, you know?
Friday. And Chemo really didn't appreciate that, so he said, you guys don't have a tent to sleep in, and there was three pregnant women sleeping in that tent.
What were the names of the other two women sleeping in the tent?
Well, it was my tent, Alicia's, and Robin. She was another one, and all three of us are pregnant and sleeping in there, and they took the tent from us.
Did you attempt then to go to Paul Marceau, the head of the Interface Satellite Shelter Program, controlling that area? Did you attempt to make any complaint about this?
No, because they really won't do anything because they really don't care anymore because they're having too many complaints.
Really?
According to what they say.
So, Alicia, what's your
Anita?
Anita and your
Alicia.
Alicia, go ahead. What's your take on this?
My take is the fact that since since the fact that I'm 2 months pregnant, you know, I basically think that they should be letting me get my rest, you know. And personally, the way what I heard, because I asked if I can keep on my tent since I'm 2 months pregnant. Now what they say is that you got to be seven to eight months pregnant in order to keep your tent up, which I think, mind my language, is a crack of bullshit.
You mean keep your tent up during the day or keep your tent up at night?
No, keeping our tent up during the day.
Now, there has been some controversy about that. What has been the policy out there regarding tents? Let me ask Bill about this so we can get a new voice in here and tell us what's cooking with you and what's the tent policy out there?
Well, the tent policy is that you're supposed to have them up at 6 o'clock, you know, for at night and take them down during the day. Except for, you know, playing favoritism with some of the staff members and stuff. And that's what I think is a lot of BS.
Are they playing favoritism with some of the staff members?
Yes.
And how does that manifest itself?
Well, it's like if you know somebody and you scratch their back and they'll scratch yours. That's what they're doing now.
Well, in other words, specifically, what examples of favoritism did you see in the how many weeks were you out there?
Well, me and my fiance were out there for about 2 months.
So you have another fiance. This is Marriage City plan here. So it's Bill and Alicia and Edward and Anita. But no one's here for me, thank God. Okay, so so you guys were out there for 2 months. You, Bill, and Alicia. So what instances of favoritism did you see?
Well, like trading stuff and trading things for something else, or you know, giving somebody something for like coffee or whatever and stuff like that, and they would give them favors for that.
What kinds of favors? And by they, are you talking about the staff of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program?
Some of them.
Some of them. How many people actually work out there?
There's about 10, 15.
Are these all men or men and women?
Men
What's
and women.
Mostly men.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you say that would this happen only with a few of them, with several, with most?
Just like three or four.
But you disagree on this. Do you think it was most, Alicia?
I think there's most of them that's involved.
Okay, now you're a little vague about this, and perhaps because we're talking about things like drugs, which might be considered as a criminal offense or something. But if you were what kinds of favors are we talking about in terms of what is done for people who are favorites?
Like getting things for them, like clothes and things like that.
Now, what's the situation with clothes distribution out there? Is there a free box? Or
yeah, sometimes, but the staff members get first pick of whatever's there. And I think that's a lot of BS, when it should be the people that are out there that need it should go first.
Now, in your 2 months there, Bill, have you seen a lot of turnover in terms of people there, or people, do you have sort of the same folks out there in terms of clients? And also, has there been turnover in the staff?
Well, there's been no turnovers in the staff that I know of.
Right.
And people always come and go because they always get pissed off at the staff members for playing favorites and doing this and doing that for other people.
Has there been, let me ask you, Edward, has there been any organized protest movement? I mean, you apparently organized a protest movement by calling the Sentinel, you folks did. Mm-hmm. But have you observed any, like, petitions circulated, or have other people expressed their concerns? If you want to speak, Edward, you don't have to if you prefer not to say anything. Come in close and speak.
Well, besides of what we did, I don't think there's been a lot of any other protests of any kind.
But how about other people? Have they come to you and expressed any concerns about conditions out there?
There's been a few people that came and been after, but they really don't come to us. We just kind of...
So your tent was torn up. Where are you staying now, or is that a secret?
Bill and Alicia have a tent, and a couple of our friends also have a tent that letting us share.
This is out at the River Street Shelter.
Yes, no. This is at the shelter.
We're still
at the back 40, and we have a couple friends sharing a tent with us right now, and Bill and Alicia have a tent. We had a big 10-man tent we were sharing with six people, and that's where they took it, because they didn't know how to set it up, and they were mad because we knew how. That's what we feel. Because we found out how to set it up right, because it didn't have poles, and I have a feeling that they didn't know what they were doing, so they got upset at us.
Now, have you considered filing a formal written complaint about this conduct, which you have the option to do, I'm pretty sure?
I don't think it'll do any good.
Are any of you interested in filing such a complaint?
Well, if they keep it up, and I will do it, if they keep up all the bullshit.
Now, by bullshit, other than the tearing of the tent, do you have any other instances of what you consider to be discrimination or abusive conduct?
The other night, we were up laughing, because it was Friday night, and we were just having a good time laughing. Everybody else in the back 40 was having fun and laughing, and we got yelled at because there was a lot of complaints, and they pointed to people that were laughing with us that he claimed was complaining about us. And that's wrong right there, because we have people on the other side of the back 40 laughing with us, and that's wrong right there.
How many people are out there? Do you have any estimates at the present time, anybody?
About 150 to about 125.
something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there has been talk, and I was discussing this in my last show. There was talk about, and there is talk of, there is a plan to close the Back 40, as you know, on November 1st, and also to bulldoze it on the 15th of December, although that may have been put back, and move the free meal into the bays, one of the bays of the one of the buildings. Now, what's your feeling about that? Do you think people would, how do campers feel about that? Has there been much discussion about that?
Well, they're going to put in 10 double-wide trailers for people with Social Security and families, but all the single people that need a place to sleep are going to be pretty much screwed. And I guess they're opening the armory and church group, but there's a lot of people out there that aren't real religious, so some of them aren't going to want to sleep in church groups. And I don't know, just a lot of people are going to be really screwed.
Now, would you be interested in working with city council members who are trying to keep the campground open? Do you feel the camp? Some people have criticized the campground as a kind of concentration camp scene where there's a lot of thuggery and favoritism going on, which is kind of a toxic site. It's noisy, it's dirty, it's regimented, you got to check in and check out. How true are these kinds of criticisms?
Well,
that's a bunch of criticisms, but I mean, are any of those criticisms true in your opinion?
Well, when you first come in, you have to, you know, tell them your name and stuff like that when you first go there. You know, so they can put it on the list and see who's there and who's not there.
Right.
Which I think it shouldn't even be that way, because it's just like when I was in juvenile hall, the same way. And as of favoritism and stuff, they do that. And I don't like it. It should be equal for everyone there, instead of getting favors from the staff members and stuff like that.
What about the actual physical conditions of the camp, the fact that it's situated next to the freeway, the fact that it was on an area that was previously kind of a dumping ground where they dumped oil and other things from garages, the fact that, let's start with those two facts, and also the rather primitive accommodations people. I mean, is there a sense of solidarity there between people? I mean, do you feel like you form networks there that you would not be able to form otherwise in shelters? I mean, is it a better situation than a shelter, let's say?
In some senses, yes. Because there's a lot of people that watch out for other people, and, you know, there's a lot of stealing and shit going on over there. And there's some people that watch other people's stuff, so it won't get stolen. And that's another thing that some of the staff members don't like.
Mm-hmm.
So can people stay there during the day? What's the story?
Yeah, they could stay there during the day, but
they can't
have the tent up at all. And today they told everybody to clear off all the tents off, or they would get thrown away.
Now, is this... Had they been less vigilant about this in the past? I mean, were they kind of more lax, or what was...
They weren't even following the rules until we started saying to the Sentinel that we were complaining about certain staff members playing favoritism and stuff like that.
So, in other words, are you saying that while your tent was torn down during the day, or let's put it this way,